UVic Oral History Program interview with Claude McKenzie, recorded on November 25th, 2005, at Victoria, BC. Interviewed by Jessica Wood, tape one, side one. Thank you. So, good morning. Do you mind starting by telling me what prompted you to join the military?
Well, 1960, a friend and I were walking in our little hometown of Sulakout, and we saw a sign that said Canadian Navy recruiting, so we went in, asked about it, did the formal test, and then a couple of weeks later we had a letter back saying that we passed it and would be really wanted to join the armed forces, Navy especially, and we said yes. So we got accepted in March 1961.
Were you the first in your family?
Pardon me?
Were you the first in your family?
No, I was the second, but I have a brother that passed away who's older than I am.
Okay. And where are you from?
New Portage, Ontario, but I did all my education at Sulakout, Ontario.
Okay. From what nation are you from?
I'm from the Lac-Seul Nation, which is about 25 miles from Sulakout.
And was your friend that you joined with First Nations as well?
No.
You said that you served in Vietnam on peacekeeping duties?
Right.
What was the journey over like for you?
It was nerve-wracking in a way, because you did a lot of practicing, exercising, in case something major came up. So we were doing a lot of exercising all the time, getting prepared. Long hours. Heat was pretty hot by the time we got there. It was April and May, June.
What kind of exercise duties were you
working? Well, we did the action stations. You go to your station and get some man overboards, make sure things like that. Prep your armament, make sure everything's working, and pretend there's somebody attacking you, and do things like that, make sure you're ready.
And your duties on the ship were?
Maintenance of the 3-inch 70 armament, and the make sure it was all prepared for if we needed it.
And what was it like when you got there?
It was, we only sailed up and down the coast of Malaysia and Thailand. We didn't actually go into Vietnam, but we just sailed up and down the coast in case we had to retrieve the peacekeepers who were Canadian peacekeepers in conjunction with the Hungarian and I believe it was the Polish nations who were looking after the zone when the withdrawal from the Americans were doing.
And how long were you over there?
We left here in January and got back in June. I got back a little earlier because of medical reasons. I was on the same ship as Nimnuk that died on the way over. And after we got to Singapore, all the Aboriginals had to take blood tests and get x-rays and all that. So they decided to send most of the Aboriginals back home after we got into Singapore, because they didn't want to take any chances, I guess, to see what they didn't know what the virus was at the time or whatever he passed away with.
And who was that?
Nimnuk? Yeah.
So there was quite a contingency of Aboriginal.
Well, we had, I believe, 6 or 7 on our ship. And being seen that Nimnuk passed away between Hong Kong and Singapore, and then when we got into Singapore, they did all the medical checks on all the Aboriginals and decided to send us home after 3.5 months.
That must have been an experience, a little bit scary.
Well, it wasn't bad. It was okay. The worst part is flying home from Hong Kong to Vancouver. It's a long flight.
Like 18-20 hours?
Yeah, very long.
Oh. And so what happened after you came back?
We came back. I put in for transfers from to Terra Nova. Went from ship to ship for about 6 months after that. And then I had a medical problem that I was able to... Actually, they released me from the Navy in 1974 because of my medical condition, which was anxiety and things like that, working with heavy machinery and machinery running all over the place and, you know, electricity and that.
For sure. So what did you do after you got out of the military?
I got out and I went to work for Corrections Canada from 1974 till 2003. 28 years with the Corrections Canada.
So you went into another enforcement?
Yeah, I worked with another federal agency, so I just transferred my pension over from the Navy to Corrections, so I didn't lose any time.
So you were... How old when you joined the Navy?
I was 18.
18. How did your family take it?
Oh, fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, no problem with them.
Well, that's good. So there... Do you think there were many people from your community that joined the military at that time?
Well, not from the reserve, but from our little town. Sulakau, I believe in 1960 and 1961, we had approximately 12 or 14 young fellows join at the same time, all within a year and a half. And I think I stayed in the longest, was 13 and a half years, all of the fellows.
So when you were in the 13 years, you went to Vietnam. Where are some of the other places that you went?
Oh, I went to 1964. Went up to Alaska during the just after the big earthquake that had up in Alaska. And then went 66. We went to South America through the Panama Canal to the east coast of South America, to Brazil and Argentina, and back. And then I was 2 years stationed, year and a half stationed in Port Arthur, Ontario, as helping the reserves training there. Then I got transferred back to the West Coast for my Trade Group 3 course. And then Trade Group 3 course.
Yes.
For what? That's, yeah, in the Navy you have courses. From Trade Group 1 is the beginning, and then 2, then 3, and then the highest you can go is Trade Group 4. And I was going up for my Trade Group 3 course, which I passed, and that's what I was working on when I was on the turnover. When we went to Vietnam, I was doing my Trade Group 3 training, what I learned on the Trade Group 3 courses.
So what was it like in Alaska? What were your duties there?
So we just went up to see if we could help the, I believe, to see if we can help the Americans, because that, what was that? Trying to remember what port we stopped in Alaska, Anchorage, to see if there any help we can the Navy could do up there, but didn't seem Americans had everything under control. And all I can see is, you know, go ashore and you can see the airport and big cracks on the runway and, you know, a lot of devastation and stuff like that. But
Brazil and going through the Panama Canal?
Oh, the Panama Canal was awesome. And the Caribbean was really very scenic and tropical. And Brazil, Buenos Aires, Argentina was farther south we went, and it was that was an experience itself. It was a different type of people, different type of cultures and things like that.
What was basic training like for you? 18.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Enjoyed it. Yeah, enjoyed it very much. It was 16 weeks. The first 4 weeks, you weren't involved in any of the sports activities because they were trying to get you into the Navy structure of training and stuff like that. And then after that, you did your sports and stuff. And I did very well in the sports part. We had 8 races, which were running up about 5 miles every Friday afternoon, and I was successful coming first in 5 out of the 8, and came second the other 3, so that was pretty good. And then I also, a group of 80 who passed out of training, I came first in the highest score for all the marks we did, for all the exams we did. I got the highest marks, and I got a pen set, but I lost that a long time ago.
So when you said it was 16 weeks, was it all in the same place?
Yeah. HMTS Cornwallis in Nova Scotia.
And so what was the difference? Was it pretty much how you expected, or...
No, I didn't know what to expect. I just went along with the crowd, and, you know, shave your head, do this and do that. So you do it the best you can. I'm trying to be, you know, mother always told me to try to do the best you can and don't say nothing, just keep going, and which I did, and I did very well in the Navy by doing that. But with Francophones and discriminations and all that stuff in 1968 and all that, that's when I had problems in the Navy.
Yeah. Do you want to talk at all about that?
Yeah, sure. I don't care. As 1968, I believe, after I finished my Troop 3 course, I was one of the top people to get promoted, and then all of a sudden the Francophones, the bilingualism came in. And if you weren't bilingualism, the your marks during your yearly report or yearly assessments were, they gave the Francophones a 0.5 more. So when you add them all up and they multiply it plus their 0.5, usually I was fourth or fifth. I always missed out by one or two before promotion. And that went on for 5 years. So I decided that was enough for me. But there was a lot of, I gotta admit, there was a lot of, you know, in the Navy right from the time I joined the ships in 1961 in July until I got out. There was a lot of discrimination on language and things like that on board ship. And there's a couple officers that I probably could have been promoted, but there's something he didn't like about me. I don't know what it was. He never got good marks or good assessments from him, and that's why I got out mostly. Mm-hmm. Plus the medical thing, but I think I'd have got farther. If it wasn't for the discrimination and the officers that did me in the last night in the 1970s.
So you found it a bit challenging then, being Aboriginal working
in
the Navy?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the last 3 years, and then I got out with a medical reason.
Mm-hmm. Did you see any other of your comrades in that, especially when you said in Nam that it was the Aboriginals that were singled out and sent home? Do you think that they had a similar experience? Or?
I don't know. They were in different... If you're in the Navy, you stay with your trade group, like the weapons surface group, you stayed with them, and that, you know, there's the odd, one of them was the odd cook, and, you know, they stay on their own, and then when you come back, you never hardly ever see them again, so. Mm-hmm.
So you basically just traveled back together.
Yeah.
That was your new unit. And just with the other guys in your unit of the same rank, did you ever experience any racism there, or was it?
Oh, yeah, they called you different names and all that stuff from... Well, I know five or six different names, and they called me all. I just took a stride for the time being, but I never forget it. Mm. Still back in your mind what they called you and different things like that.
How did you cope at the time?
Pardon me?
How did you cope at the time?
Well, I just put it in the back of my mind, and just like my mother always told me, just know what anybody says to you, just do your best, and don't raise any feathers up on anybody.
Good. So, did you have much, when you were abroad in that, did you have much contact in that with your family?
No, not very much, because I was always out on the West Coast, other than a year and a half at Port Arthur, Ontario, which was 250 miles from my mother and dad.
So you're a fair distance away from home most of the time.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have many siblings?
Nope.
No, just the one. Okay, let's pause for a second here. So you were saying that your father served?
Yeah, my father joined the Navy, joined the Army, and I believe beginning of the First World War. And he went overseas, and he was in the military police, but we didn't discuss much of his part of the life, because at the moment I was more involved in education and surviving in the little town of Sulakaut. And I only saw him twice, 2 months of every year, from 1950 till I joined the Navy in 1961. And
he was working at a truck line?
He was a Scotsman who came from England. His family came from England in the 1800s. And he was born in Quebec, and my mother's the native part of me, in which she was born in Oxenburg. And he had a fur trading store, and my mother was looked after the house and that. And my mother just passed away a couple of years ago, actually. She was 90-some years old.
And so when you were going to school then, I know that one of our other veterans was talking about there was cadets where you sort of had to be a part of it to begin with. Was there any of that there?
Any what?
Where they had sort of military training in school?
Well, we had, we didn't have to join, or we didn't have to do it, but I joined the Army cadets in grade 7, 8, and 9, I guess, and went to cadet camp in Clear Lake, Manitoba, 1958, I think. But going into the Army cadets and then joining the Navy, I didn't know what the difference was, but I didn't care.
What was the Army cadets like?
Well, it was fun, a lot of fun.
Yeah?
It was a little experience. It gave you a little bit of discipline, a little bit of more pride maybe in yourself and different things like that. And I wish personally that all Aboriginals and whites should join the armed forces for a couple of years to get the basic training and the basic values in life. That's my personal view, but I don't know, they don't do that in Canada. They do in the States, I believe, but I think it would be good for them.
I think
more of them would be more asset to themselves if they did that.
So even with the challenges that you experienced,
yeah.
You still think that...
Even just for 3 years. I mean, you can get, the armed forces pay for everything you want. The courses that you can get and get you up there. And it's your decision if you don't want to go on or not, which is, at least they give you a partial trade. And then you get good... The money's half decent when I went joined. Granted, it was only $90 a month.
And that was the money then?
That was to spend $90 a month. That's all we had.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money then, though.
Yeah.
I think the...
So about average length, you were saying?
I think it would be beneficial. That's only my interpretation and thinking. Every youth, Aboriginal and youth in Canada, should, if possible, join the armed forces for even just for 2 years to get training, a little bit of discipline, and opens your eyes when you go traveling across the world with the different armed forces. It's amazing what you can see and what's good and what's bad, and then you come home and you respect Canada more so when you're away, because the countries you go to are not as what they may up to be. And when you come home, you really respect that Canada the way it is. So the training and the free training that the armed forces give and the discipline they give, and you just get a second in and survive for the 3 years or whatever it is, and you would believe how much difference it would be an asset probably for the for the reserves and the when they go looking for jobs in the public sector.
Okay, well, thank you for your time.
No, you're welcome. Remember, there was a ceremony last year with Nimnook and CFB Esquimalt.
Yeah, I remember hearing something.
His daughter lives in Soup. His wife and daughter live in Soup. And he died of some kind of virus in 1973, and I was on the ship when that happened.
Mm.
That must have been tough. It was, you don't know what's going on. Just find out that somebody's sick, and then a couple hours later, he passed away and rushed to the closest city or town in Malaysia to get a doctor, and by the time I got there, it was gone.
And what was this? Did you go to the ceremony that was here?
No, I didn't, because I was away on holidays at the time.
But they honored him?
Yeah, they honored him at the Naden Cemetery, I think, around the Gorge Golf Course there. There's a cemetery.
He was a captain.
Pardon me?
He said he was a captain?
No, he's a corporal.
Corporal?
Yeah. I don't. I remember his face, but I can't remember because he was an engineer, engine room personnel, and I was in the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. NAVA group made a special plaque or a special box to have his medals put in. Ernie and did a lot of work towards that 2 years ago.
And so now, do you still stay active with the Veterans Associations, or...
By me?
Do you still stay active then with...
Oh, yeah, if they ever call me to go back to meeting, I'll be there. But they haven't called me in 4 months. I gave all my treasury books to the next treasurer, and I just sit and wait. If they don't call me, I guess I'll just be sitting here and doing my thing.
So that's pretty important to you, though, to have Aboriginal veterans recognized.
Yeah. But the thing is, they gotta have their meetings every month. I'm very sticky on that. That's how I was brought up. You join something, you do something, you do it by the book.
What was it like, Jim? Was that the first time you'd really left your community when you joined the Navy?
Well, I gotta say I know, because every time I left like Sulakau to go back up in the wilderness in the summertime, that was same as leaving your friends in town, go back north for 2 months, and then come back out again and school here. Did we get reacquainted and all that stuff? So it wasn't really that much difference.
So it wasn't a big culture shock?
No. I enjoyed it. I got to admit, going to Winnipeg, joining up for 3 days in Winnipeg, getting on the train, on the CPR train, and taking the train all the way to St. John's, New Brunswick, and then that was a lot of fun. You have 70 or 80 young lads all going to the same place. Every train stop, you picked up a couple more.
So you must have been quite the bunch when you got there.
But the only thing is, I didn't enjoy it. At the first time when we got on the ship to go from St. John's, New Brunswick to Digby, it was a little rough, and first time I'd been on the sea, so I was a little weary at the time, but after that was fine.
Got your sea legs?
Oh yeah, didn't take long, but I had to go, didn't know how to react to it at the first time, but after that you get used to it.
And did you go ashore in Malaysia?
Not in Malaysia, went ashore in Midway. If ever anybody wants to go to Midway and have some fun watching a goonie bird take off and land, is a big experience. These gorgeous big birds that fly in the air so peacefully try to land and don't know how to judge distance. Oh, what a... It is funny. And see them take off, they can see 400 feet of clear space. And they will start running and running and running. And next thing there's only 200 and still not up in the air. And he's running at like H to get up into the air. And next thing he runs into the bush. Oh, believe that. Deer is so funny. But then when they get in the air, the most graceful bird I've seen. But that is an experience I've ever enjoyed.
That was at
Midway.
Guam?
No, in Midway.
Midway?
Yeah. And then in Guam, we just went and played golf while we were refueling. And that those goonies, I'll never forget them the rest of my life. And Hong Kong, we were in Hong Kong for 2 weeks getting our ship in order before we went down to Vietnam, Malaysia, and Thailand coast and into Singapore. Oh, I enjoyed it very much. But I was surprised the number of people who were in Hong Kong, though. I'll tell you that. I mean, one small little island and all these people live on there. Oh.
Population in Canada.
Oh, my God.
City.
Yeah. People are just bumping shoulder to shoulder and going.
Yeah.
And the things that they sell. Oh, my God. Snake meat. You know, pigeons and chickens and live fish, and you take it out of the tank, and this is the one you want, that's one you pay for it, weigh it, and here's your fish.
Did you try any of that stuff?
No.
No.
I watched them, but I didn't eat it.
Stay to the grub on the boat?
Yeah. Well, but as I say, these goonie birds, if you ever, ever get a chance, I don't know if you ever do, but if you ever get a chance to go to Midway, go and see these birds. It is something you can't describe until you see them, and then you just laugh all day long.
Still now?
Yeah, still now.
Still now.
And if I see something on TV, I watch it, because I just, and whatever comes on TV, I watch them.
That's awesome. Well, again, thank you for your time.
Well, you're welcome.
And maybe we'll come back and see you again.
Sure, anytime.
And interview with Claude McKenzie, November 25th, 2005, in Victoria, BC, interviewed by Jessica Wood. Thank you.